Well, I know that's a long passage. There's a lot of things going on, and it looks like it's all about food. They want to eat meat, so they get bread. What's the point? What does this have to do with sin? More importantly, what does that have to do with you and me? What we've been doing, started last week, was looking at this issue, this topic of sin, this big word, though a small word, and all the weight that it carries with it. And what we're doing is walking through the Bible week by week over the next few weeks and taking a sort of a survey of what the Bible says sin is. Because it can't just be summed up necessarily in one sentence. It's multifaceted, it's nuanced, it's complex. Last week we saw with Cain and Abel this sin that he says crouches at the door. The sin that is going to crouch and take you and me over without us even knowing it. And this week we have a sin, which is what I'm calling, for lack of a better phrase, the if-only sin. You'll see here there's a couple times they repeat this. The Israelites repeat this. Here's the context. They're freed. They were slaves in Egypt. Now they're freed. And Moses, their valiant leader, is taking them through the wilderness. And God, in all of his grace and mercy, sees fit to send down bread, manna, where they say, what is this? Which is what manna means. And he sends it down by grace and feeds them, and they're surviving on it. And then all of a sudden, it says they start to rumble. They start to complain. And they start to say, if only. If only, they said, we could go back to the way things were. If only we could get meat. If only we could go back to Egypt and be as it was. That's when we are truly happy. That's when we are at rest. And they're sorely mistaken. But before you look down on them for this, but you first have to try to associate yourself with this. MT, I'm going to ask you if we can close the back door. Thank you, sir. This if only sin. If only what? If only dot, dot, dot. If I only had this, I'd be happy. If I only had that, I would be fine. And you'll see that the Israelite people today are they're going to be destroyed by the if only sin. They're not happy. They're not content with having God for God himself. They want more. And they go to great lengths to fool themselves and deceive themselves to think, if we just get meat. It says we are better off. They're grumbling. They're complaining. And then, we didn't finish the story. It gets a little gruesome. You can go on and read it. What God does is he gives them quail. And he says, here's meat. And he says, in the passage, he says, you're going to eat so much of it, it's coming out your nose. And it will never satisfy you. And at the end, there's people who died from eating too much of this. And this is why they call this place the grave of those who craved. The grave of those who craved. It's a sin. It doesn't maybe look like it on the surface, but we'll break it down. The sin of if only, and then the sacrifice of if only as a way to fix you and me from saying if only. Look, I said this last week. There's people who come to church or people who don't come to church, and they have a real problem with the word sin, and I understand that. For years and years and years, you might have heard the word sin beating you down and judging you and condemning you. You're a sinner. God will smite you. And fundamentally, a lot of people wrestle with this issue of sin. They may not even believe that sin exists, or sin is subjective at best. It's relative to your social norms. And I said, if you don't like the word sin, okay, it's real. But rather think about it this way. There's something horribly wrong with us. There's something horribly wrong and amiss with the world outside and with the world inside of our own hearts. We know this, don't we? We see one of the common threads of almost every major worldview, faith worldview, and religion is to say we should the golden rule, treat people nice, love each other, don't hurt each other, tell the truth, don't lie, don't steal. Why do we do it then? Almost every religion agrees that you and I should look at other people and treat them well. And yet, you can open up the news any day of the week and you will find that we don't do it. Why? The Bible has an answer, and it's called sin. As a way to say there's something wrong with our hearts. There's something evilly destructive. Sin here is so much, and what you see with the Israelites in this passage, it's so much more than just breaking a rule. is so much more than just telling a white lie and breaking a rule or not doing the Ten Commandments. Sin is destructive, and it's going to destroy these people, and it's going to start ripping at the fabric of the very community that they form. And Moses, at one point, their leader, is going to say, kill me. I'd rather die than deal with their if-onlyness. See, we as people tend to underestimate the power of sin. We say, well, it is breaking rules, and I didn't break any rules today, so I'm good. Check the box and move on. No. The Bible has a much more nuanced understanding of sin. It's a power, and it's destructive. You and I, in our heart of hearts, we know how we should treat other people, but we fail to do it. Why? Something's wrong with us. Paul, he says it in this famous passage of Romans 7, chapter 7, verses 17 through 20. And what I'm going to do, you can look at your Bible, by the way, right now, Romans chapter 7. I'm going to read from a translation which most of you are familiar with, called The Message. Now, this is not the Bible. This is not the literal translation of this passage. I'm reading from it, and I'm not going to preach from it. But I want you to see what Paul says, and I want you to see it in different wording, because Paul knows our hearts better than we know our hearts. He says this in Romans 7, 17 through 20, and if you have a Bible translation, feel free to follow along. But this is in a little bit of different wording, and he says this, but I need something more. For if I know the law but still can't keep it, and if the power of sin within me keeps sabotaging my best intentions, I obviously need help. I realize that I don't have what it takes. I can will it, but I can't do it. I decide to do good, but I don't really do it. I decide not to do bad, but then I do it anyway. My decisions, such as they are, don't result in actions. Something has gone wrong deep within me, and it gets the better of me every time. Paul knows his heart. Paul knows that even though he tries to do the best, he knows he won't do it. He says, I can't will it. Sin is powerful. Grace is even more powerful. And I want to see this today in this passage. The people in this passage have the if-only sin. And if we're honest, you and me have the same thing. And I'll explain what I mean by that in a minute. And it's going to take the if-only sacrifice to get us right again. First, the if-only sin. Look at this. Go back to verse 4, 5, and 6. And they say it many times, and I could have chosen this passage. You'd choose it from the book of Exodus if you want. They cry out, if only we had this, we'd be fine. We'd be smashingly fine if we just had meat. They actually go so far as to say, I'd rather go back to being a slave. Because it was so great back then. They say we had cucumbers and melons and onion and garlic. Are you getting hungry? And say, now all we have is this stinking bread. They say it many times. And you're bound to look at this passage and say, you guys are real idiots. Do you not remember what happened to you in Egypt? Here these people are saying, we're free. Now if we could just go back and get cucumbers, we'll be slaves again, that's fine. Their view of reality is so distorted by their if-onlyness. They think, if only they get the meat, they'll be happy. So much so that they're willing to have short-term memory loss. And it's easy to look at them and say, hey, idiots, you go back to Egypt right now, you ain't getting cucumbers, they're going to kill you. But they say, no, if only we could go back. Things were so much better there. Their short-term memory has distorted their view of reality. And you know what? It's really funny in the movie Finding Nemo when Dory has a short-term memory, you know? And she goes to the cliffside in the caves and the fish told her, don't go above it, go through it. And she sees it and she says, wait a second, I remember something. We're supposed to go through it, not above it, over it. And Marlin just goes. And it's funny and it's kind of tragic when Dory has a short-term memory loss. And the Israelites say, what? Slavery. We had it good back there. If only. They had a slave mentality. They were still stuck in the mentality of, if I can just please myself, then everything will be fine. Here they are. God himself is dropping literally bread from heaven, bread from the sky, and it's not good enough for them. They want and they need something else. They're very, very spiritually naive, but before we judge them, pretend that you're like them. What is your if only in life? How would you finish the sentence? See, they say, if only we get quail meat. And I don't think any of you tonight are really craving quail meat. I don't know. Maybe you're saying, if only I can have dinner, then my stomach will stop grumbling right now. That's fine. But what is your if only in life? Their if only was meat. And it's easy to judge them. Yet all of us have the if only in our hearts. Go back to what Paul said in Romans 7. He says, I know what I'm supposed to do, but there's a power on me and I can't do it. Something is wrong with me, horribly, horribly wrong with me. Paul tests his own heart. He's not spiritually naive. He's testing his own heart because he knows that there's an if only in his own heart. I don't know what it was for Paul. I don't know what it is for you, but there's going to be something. And that's the sin here of the people. They weren't necessarily doing anything horribly immoral or wrong. We talked about this with Cain last week. These people aren't out, you know, doing the horribly wrong, atrocious, you know, immoral things that you and I might say are sins. What is their sin? Their sin is to use God as an accessory and to say, if only I had that thing, I'd be fine. They're spiritually blind. They're spiritually naive. And it's gonna destroy them. And Paul, to all of his credit in Romans 7, at least he's being spiritually honest with himself. He's saying, I know that there's a problem in my heart. I know it. I can't fix it. Jesus can, I can't, but I know it's there. Here, ladies and gentlemen, you tonight will never be able to conquer the if-only sin in your life until you ask yourself, what is your if-only? What is the thing that you finish that sentence with? Test your own heart. Be a Paul. Ask yourself. Otherwise, you're bound and be doomed like these people. To complain, to grumble, to spit at grace, to turn against God. They say, if only I had the meat. Their expectations and their desires are so small and short, and they can't even see the true condition of their heart. They don't even know that, in fact, they're spiritual slaves. They say, we will go back to being real slaves that in a minute. But all along, God wants them to see that they're spiritual slaves to the if-onlyness in their life. And you got to test it. And I push you tonight to do this. And I'm going to belabor this for a second. Because you won't know, and I won't know, the condition of our heart unless we ask ourselves, what's the if-only? Unless we test ourselves here. Listen, I think I'm getting older, yes. But I think I'm in relatively decent shape. I go to the gym every week and, you know, every day or whatever, pretty much. I try to exercise. And now, if you ask me, I'd say, yes, I'm in swimmingly fine shape. Although I cough sometimes and I get stomach aches and stuff like that. But overall, I'm pretty good. Now, the other day, I was on my all fours, and both kids of mine tried jumping on my back and wanted me to play horsey all through the house. And if you ever played horsey with a 3- and a 5-year-old on your back, you start to realize how out of shape you really are. I could tell myself I'm in great shape, but when I had them on my back and I was huffing and puffing after about 3 minutes, and I said, kids, get off, I can't do this anymore, I realized, see, I would say I'm in perfect shape, not perfect, but kind of good, until I tested it. The Israelites here would say, we're in great shape, until they test themselves and say, what is our if only? What is their addiction? And the thing about this sin, this if only, it means that you and I are always going to be in quest of something to fulfill ourselves, to complete ourselves. Fill it in the blank. If only I could get married. If only I could have children. If only I could get that job. If only I could do this. If only I could do this. And we'll constantly be on a cycle of trying to fulfill ourselves. And look what happens in the story. The Israelites say, if only. They have distress, and they want an agent to meet the distress. But like any addiction that you might know about, anytime you have distress and you use an agent to meet that distress, you need more and more of that agent to meet the distress as it goes on. This is why God says you're going to eat quail until it comes out your nose. Isn't that disgusting? It's a way to say this. Yeah, I'll give you everything you want. If you think if only you get quail, you'll be happy, fine, get it. You won't be happy. It'll come out your nose. It'll make you sick. He says, you're not going to eat it just one day or 5 days or 10 days. You'll be hooked on it. You'll forever need it. Now, you and I may not need quail tonight, but there's something. The if only of the Israelites was to say, if we just had that. And God says, no, you have me. Take that agent to meet your distress, and like any addiction, you will gorge yourself on it, and it'll never make you happy. You'll grow tolerant to it, and the next time you'll need more of it and more of it. Put it your career, your reputation, your success, whatever it may be. If that's your if only, you will always need more of it until it comes out your nose. It's like drinking coffee, kind of. And coffee's nothing wrong with it. Don't get me wrong. I'm not judging you if you're a coffee person. But those of you who like coffee and maybe you're a little addicted to it, that's okay. No judgments here. But you know, you have one cup of coffee in the morning and it wakes you up. And the next day, maybe you need one and a half. Maybe the next day you need two. Maybe the next day you need three. Coffee, caffeine, anything. If that's your if only, you'll constantly need more of it. And what you'll do, the sickening thing, what the Israelites do and what you and I do, you'll distort reality in order to get that thing. They say, we had it fine back then. And you're looking at yourself and you want to smack them on the head. No, you weren't fine back there. You were slaves. Yeah, you had niceties. You had your little cucumbers and your melons and your garlic. But you were whipped and beaten and put to work. You want to go back to that? And they were like, yeah. Don't judge them. They're distorting reality to justify their if only. If only I had this, then I'd be happy. Lastly, before I move on, this is the if only sin. That need for one thing to complete your life and my life. But the ironic part is, the one thing that when we get it, we want more of it. And then we get more of it, we want even more of it. And look what happens in the passage. The Israelites' if-only addiction rips the community apart. Moses goes to God, and he says, I'm sick and tired of these people. Moses is called to lead them. He's their leader and their guide. And he goes to God and says, kill me. I can't stand them anymore. I can't stand their codependency. I can't stand their foolishness. I can't stand their distortion of reality. Look, if you have an if only in your life that ruins your life and runs your life and dominates your life, I guarantee that that if only will start to get in the way of your relationships, of your community. Why? Because the if only is the thing you seek, and you'll use people as a means to get to that end. You'll see people as a means. Look, the people saw Moses not as their leader necessarily. They saw him as a means to the end of getting their little quail meat. And Moses goes up to the mountain. He says, did I conceive all these people? Did I give birth to them? Where am I getting meat? He says, I'm not able to carry all these people alone, for they're too heavy for me. If this is the way you're going to treat me, put me to death at once. Now, you may not say put me to death, but I guarantee you, if you have friends in your life who have an if only that starts to dominate their life, you probably felt the way Moses feels. You can't stand the codependency. You see them with this addiction, whatever it may be. Maybe they are addicted to something physical. Maybe they are addicted to coffee. I don't know. And it's ruining their life. I doubt it. But they're probably addicted to something much bigger. They're probably addicted to that reputation. They're probably addicted to success. They're probably addicted even to money, acclaim, achievement, whatever it may be. Their if only will start to tear you apart from them, because they will tend to use you and other people as a means to get to that end. And that's what the Israelites were doing. Their if only made them look at Moses and say, get us meat. And Moses says, I cannot deal with this anymore. These codependent, craving people. You see, this is why the topic of sin is so hard to break down and discuss, because it's not simply breaking one of the Ten Commandments. That's not really what they're doing here. And you would look at them and you'd say, Pastor, all they want is meat. Nothing's wrong with it. And by the way, nothing's wrong with you having meat. We're pro-meat, okay? If you're a vegetarian, that's fine too. But nothing's inherently sinful about meat. But look, the people are starting to use God as a means to their own fulfillment. They were starting to say, God, you're good, but you're not enough. And I need this thing to help me go to sleep at night. And I need this thing to get me up in the morning. And I need this thing to make me happy. And I need this thing to give me rest and joy. And God says, you want it? Have it. It will never do it for you. That's the if only sin. Now, how do you fix it? How do you and I get out of this type of sin? This type of slavery? Because these people are spiritual slaves, are they not? To quail meat. You and I are spiritual slaves to things much more insidious, dark, and much more covered up, I think, than just quail meat. How do you break out of the cycle? How do you and I break out of the slave mentality? I said that there's an if-only sin, but there comes an if-only sacrifice that you need to see. If in order for you and me to stop saying, God, if only you'll give me this, then I'll be okay. And in order for us to say, God, if only I have you, I am okay. But first, notice what God does in this passage. In order to break them out of their little slavery and their if-onlyness, what does God do? He comes in and he talks to them. He intervenes. You see this? He has every right to snap his finger and wipe them off the face of the earth. And it says his anger is so mad that he's burning with it. He is angry. And in his anger, what does he do? He confronts their if-onlyness. As a way to say this, the first step for you and me to break the addiction, whatever it may be, is we're going to have to allow God and the community around us to come to us and say, hey, you have an if only, and it's ruining you, and I can't watch you go by and do this anymore. Someone has to enter in. Someone has to tell you. You have to allow access for people to come into your life, a small group, a community, whatever it is. You've got to let people come into your life and say, listen, you, I've seen, have an appetite for something other than God. And that appetite's going to eat at you. Every addiction does. If it's a physical addiction, it'll tear your body apart. If it's a spiritual addiction, it'll tear your heart apart. But the first step is you got to let God intervene. And more importantly, you got to let the community intervene. This is what Moses does when he goes up on behalf of the people. Moses has every right just to go, bye-bye, I leave you, I'm done. I got better things to do. But he goes to God and he pleads, and he's not happy, fine, but he pleads. Do you have people in your life right now who will go to God on your behalf and plead for you? Do you have got people that you let into your life to say, listen, I've seen you now develop an appetite for something, and it's unhealthy, and it's not good, and I want to help you with this. Can you help? And I want you to help me with my if-onlyness. Do you have that? Our desires are too weak. Theirs were so weak. They wanted quail meat instead of God. It's a pretty poor trade-off, right? What would lead people to desire quail meat over God? I don't know. But I know it's in my heart. I know it's in our hearts. You have to let people speak into the your if only. They say to you, you're craving something, and it's not God, and it's going to destroy you. I want you out of it. Next, though, how do you get out of this? How do you and I break out of this, if only? How do we make a new if only? Well, look at this. Go to Jesus. What was Jesus's if only? How would Jesus have finished the sentence, if only, dot, dot, dot? Think about it. And if you can, go to the book of John, chapter 17. And you'll hear a prayer that Jesus says to God. And he doesn't say the words, if only, but he might as well. Because he says this, I ask not only on behalf of these, meaning us, but also on behalf of those who will believe in me through their word, that they may all be one. What's Jesus' if only? It's you. He says, if only I have you. His if onlyness is you. So therefore, your if-onlyness is going to be him, nothing else. And he goes on to say, I in them and you in me, that they may become completely one, so that the world may know that you have sent me and have loved them even as you have loved me. Father, I desire that those also whom you have given me may be with me where I am, to see my glory, which you have given me because you loved me before the foundation of the world. Look, Jesus' if only is you, it's me. Our if only is everything else in the world, petty delights. It's like Edmund in the Chronicles of Narnia. He'll sell his brother and his sisters out for Turkish delights. Little candies. All he wants to do is stuff his face with Turkish delights until literally they're almost coming out of his nose. And he's willing to sell his brother and sisters down the river to the White Witch if he can just get his little Turkish delights. And the people of Israel say, if we could just get our quail meat. We'll be happy, if only, if only, if only. And Jesus stands up to God and he says, basically, if only, God, they can be with me and you. And if it means I die, so be it. Look at the passage. Moses looks at the people, and they're crying and grumbling and complaining, and they say, if only quail meat. And Moses goes up and he says, I'm sick of it. Kill me now. I'd rather die than deal with their if-onlyness. But there's one greater than Moses who came. And Jesus looks at your if-onlyness, and he says, don't just kill me. I will sacrifice myself for them. Moses says he'd rather die to get rid of the addictive stupidity of the people. Jesus says, I will die for the addictive stupidity of the people. This is why in Hebrews 3, the writer of Hebrews connects Moses to Jesus, and he says, yet Jesus is worth more glory than Moses, just as the builder of a house has more honor than the house itself. Look, Moses was a good example. He grew frustrated, though, with the people, and he saw their codependency, and he saw their addiction to that little stupid quail meat, and he knew that forever they'd be chasing the thing, and it would never make them happy. It would be never enough until it came out of their nose, and it still wouldn't make them happy. It'd make them sick to their stomach, and it would kill them. And he goes up to God, and he says, just shoot me now. Get me over this. I don't want anything to do with these people. But Jesus, the greater Moses, he goes to the cross, and he says, looks down at you and me, and he says, God, they say, if only, but I want to say, if only them. And he's willing, and he does die, and he does rise, so that you and I will know what true love is. He was the one who died to take that burden. Moses says, I don't want anything to do with this burden anymore. Jesus says, I will take the burden on the cross. You and I spend our life chasing after everything we think will make us happy. And yet Jesus is there to say on the cross, I'm all you need to be happy. This is a great line by Robert Frost where he says, love is an irresistible desire to be irresistibly desired. Love is an irresistible desire to be irresistibly desired. Listen, do you know that all of your irresistible desires right now in the world will never irresistibly desire you? Let me say it this way. If your if only is a good job, if your if only is success, if your if only is reputation and affirmation and acclaim, those things will never irresistibly desire you. You may irresistibly desire them, money, happiness, family, whatever it may be, but those will never irresistibly desire you. Jesus is the only one who says, you want to know what love is? I'm the one who irresistibly desires you. That's love. That's giving. That's grace. That's the gospel. Jesus on the cross says, stop with the Turkish delights. Stop with the quails or whatever else you think that if you stuff your face with it and it comes out your nose that you will be happy. You never, ever will until you come and see all that he offers you. Let me close by putting it this way. I'm going to read a little story for you. Is that okay? Can we do story time? Can we close in the couple minutes that we have? You can close your eyes if you want. We can do a little story time. And most of you know this story. And I did this story about 3 years ago here at church, and I love it. Every once in a while, I go back and open it up and read it because it reminds me of what it means that Jesus was willing to give up to get me, that I was his if only, and that all he wants to do is have me rest on him and desire nothing more. It's the story of the giving tree. Most of you probably know this story. Well-known story, right? You remember the story. This tree, lovely tree, with leaves and apples and branches. And there's a little boy, and all he desires to do is climb in the tree and jump around the tree and laugh and everything. And the story goes on, and the boy gets older. And he leaves, and the tree's sad. It says, then one day the boy came to the tree, and the tree said, come, boy. Come and climb my trunk and swing from my branches and eat apples and play in my shade and be happy. But the boy said, I'm too big to climb and play. I want to buy things and have fun. I want some money. If only. I'm sorry, said the tree, but I have no money. I only have leaves and apples. Here, take my apples, boy. Go and sell them in the city. Then you'll have money and you'll be happy. So the boy climbed up the tree, gathered the apples, and carried them away. And the tree was happy, but the boy stayed away for a long time, and the tree grew sad again. Then one day the boy came back, and the tree shook with joy, and it said, "Come, boy, climb up my trunk and swing from my branches and be happy." "I'm too busy to climb trees," said the boy. "I want a house to keep me warm. I want a wife and I want children, and so I need a house. Can you give me a house?" "I have no house," said the tree. "The forest is my house, but you may cut off my branches and build a house. Then you will be happy." So the boy cut off the branches, carried them away, and he built the house. And the tree was happy, but the boy stayed away for a long time. And when he came back, the tree was so happy she could hardly speak. "Come, boy," she whispered. "Come and play." "I'm too old and sad to play," said the boy. "I want a boat, if only, that will take me far away from here. Can you give me a boat?" "Cut down my trunk and make a boat," the tree said. "Then you can sail away and be happy." So the boy cut down her trunk and made a boat and sailed away, and the tree was happy, but not really. And after a long time, the boy came back again. And it closes by saying, the tree says, "I'm sorry, boy, but I have nothing left to give you. My apples are gone." The boy says, my teeth are too weak for apples." The tree says, "My branches are gone. You cannot swing on them." And he says, "I'm too old to swing on branches." And the tree says, "My trunk is gone. You can't climb on it." And the boy said, "I'm too tired to climb." "I'm sorry," sighed the tree. "I wish that I could give you something, but I have nothing left. I am just an old stump. I'm sorry." But the boy whispered, "I don't need very much now. Just a quiet place to sit and rest. I am so very tired." "Well," said the tree, straightening herself up as much as he could, "well, an old stump is good for sitting and resting. Come, boy, sit down, sit and rest." And the boy did, and the tree was happy, and the boy was happy. Look, the little boy goes to that tree and he says, if only I could have money, take my apples. If only I could have a wife and a house, take my branches. If only I could have a boat and go far away, take my... At the end of the day, he comes back and he says, "I'm old and I'm too tired, and I just want a place to sit and rest." And the tree, which has been reduced down to a stump, says, "Come, rest on me. Stumps are good for that." Jesus on the cross being ripped, torn, beaten, bloodied, bruised, reduced to a stump of a person, says, "Come, let me be your if only. Sit and rest." That's what stumps are good for. That's what the cross is good for. Let that be your if only. And then when you start to pray in your life, when you start to seek things in your life, you won't go after the if only. You won't go after the Turkish delights or the quail meat or whatever little pleasantries will get you through the day and come out your nose. You'll go to the tree and you'll say, "If only you, because first you said, if only me, and you died for me." Let that be your if only. Go in prayer now. Find rest in that. If you've known this for a long time, fine. Pray it again to your heart. What does it mean that he was the one who gave to you at the risk of expense of his own life to make you his if only? Go in prayer now.